I'm Beth Golay, and this is Marginalia. Larissa Pham's debut novel, Discipline, follows Christine, a writer who has just published a novel that fictionalizes aspects of her relationship with her painting professor in grad school. It's a Me Too-inspired account that eventually attracts the painter's attention, years after the events occur. I recently spoke with Larissa Pham about Christine's experiences as an author and why she feels this book about revenge is actually a book about compassion. Here's our conversation. Can you give our listeners a description of Discipline? Do you have an elevator pitch for it?
Yes. Discipline is a novel that follows Christine, who is herself a writer on tour for her debut novel. She's written a revenge fantasy inspired by this real-life entanglement with her former mentor, which ultimately derailed her promising painting practice. And while she's on the road, the villain of her book reaches out to let her know he's read it. And that reconnection ultimately draws Christine to Maine, where she confronts her old mentor, and she's forced to consider this question, which I think is really the animating question of the book. What do we do with the people who have harmed us?
So when the book opens, we meet Christine, and she's embarking on her own book tour, and she has lost her luggage. Why was this the right place to begin our journey with her?
I really wanted to begin the book in a liminal space. I wanted Christine to be embarking on this journey that she couldn't really turn back from. It seemed important to almost like throw her in the deep end. And an acquaintance of mine had gone through a very similar luggage mix-up, which I didn't even think was possible, but it is. And that just seemed like such a wonderful way to get things going on the page, to give her a problem to solve in the very beginning of the book. And I think it says something about Christine's character too, that she really just like goes for it. She's like, I am going to find this person and I am going to get my luggage.
So in the book, Christine has authored a fictional account of her own experience with an older professor, and she's recounting parts of that experience while on book tour. It felt very meta to me because you're an author, you've been on book tour. You're also embarking on a book tour for this book about a fictional account. How does it feel? I mean, you're in a similar position that Christine is in. How does that feel as an author?
It's funny. I love a meta narrative. And when I was writing this book, I was really enjoying the act of being a writer, writing about another writer, working on a book. But I will say with book tour, it's almost become like a little too meta. Like I'm like, I didn't anticipate this actually. And I will say that Christine is much more dedicated to her own book tour than I am. She's really put it together. She's really putting herself out there. But there are these funny moments of strange mirroring. I did a reading where the sound lagged quite a bit. And there's a similar moment in the text where Christine is like, oh, the sound's lagging. I don't know if it's actually me talking. And as I was reading, I was like, wait a second. Like, I was reading that line and I was like, this is the same thing. So there is that funny mirroring that happens, which is completely unintentional.
So one of the themes of Discipline is the imbalance of power between Christine and her painting professor. In the novel, Christine says she started thinking about the novel during a season, and this is a quote, during a season in which it seemed like every woman on the internet was coming forward with a story of sexist mistreatment at the hands of a wealthy and powerful man. So Christine's encounter really changed the entire trajectory of her life, didn't it? I mean, what did you want to explore here?
So that moment that Christine is referring to is obviously the Me Too movement. And I remember that very clearly. I was working in anti-violence at the time, and I was really following the news and following media. And so seeing all these narratives was like very, very just moving to me, really impactful. And so Christine is taking inspiration from this time as well. It's kind of what emboldens her to tell her own story. But at the same time, like, you know, I started writing this book in 2022, and a new question that had arisen for me was like, well, what do we do after we tell our stories? Like, what happens when you tell your story? What happens if that story is questioned? What happens if you know, that person is still out there and, you know, can maybe even talk to you. Like, what would that be like? And it seemed like such frightening but also exciting territory to get to explore within a novel.
Another prominent theme is the role of secrets. Can you talk about Christine's decision to keep her experience with her professor a secret and then, you know, later come forward with it through a fictionalized account of her experience? How does this affect her? How do these secrets affect her?
Yeah, it's interesting. So Christine, after the end of her, you know, entanglement maybe or affair with her mentor, she drops out of her graduate program. She drops out of this MFA in painting that she started mostly at his behest. And she's really doubting herself as an artist. She's like, I don't know if I'm actually a good painter or if like this guy just like said I was. And so she's so upset by this and angry and humiliated that she decides to reinvent herself as a writer. And so it becomes very important to her that nobody knows that she failed in this really major way. And so she moves to New York, she makes new friends, she gets a new job, she starts writing. And, you know, writing is a form of expression for her, but it's also a way for her to recreate a kind of identity. And I would hazard that, you know, it's the combined forces of hearing other women's stories and seeing other books and essays and memoirs come out that emboldens Christine to be like, okay, I'm ready to tell my story, but I'm going to tell it in my way. And the way she chooses to tell it is still like a very exaggerated and vengeful narrative. She's still quite angry by the time it comes out.
You just mentioned that she was able to reinvent herself. And one of the passages in the book focuses on outside perceptions of the narrator of Christine. And it reads, I had begun to notice that people responded to me in a certain way after meeting me in person. Once they knew how I looked and dressed, and that, coupled with the content of my book, made them treat me with a kind of intrigue that sometimes bordered on sexual. It was as though, having met me and knowing what they thought they knew about me vis-a-vis my book, they expected me to be a specific kind of person, a specific kind of woman, and were delighted when I behaved in a way that met their expectations. Can you talk to me about these expectations that the outside perspective put on Christine?
Yeah, it's really helpful to hear you read it out loud, especially coming off this last question, because you identify this moment where Christine has left painting as this kind of like change in the trajectory of her career. And a big part of that is that she's unable to separate her talent from the way that Richard, her mentor, perceived her. And so even though she's gone to this new form, she realizes that this the same kind of like expectations are placed on her, which is like, you know, the world is still very image oriented. It's still very quite sexist. And, you know, as a woman writer, especially as a young woman writer, Christine is realizing that, like, you know, if people look at her and they're like, oh, I can brand you a certain way, I can position you a certain way, you've written about this sexy topic, so I'm going to present you this way. And she's kind of bristling against that because she's experienced it once before. And maybe she was a little naive to think that it would be different, but she's kind of running into this issue again. She's running up against the patriarchy again.
You know, I mentioned that passage because there was another one later where she talks about herself as an art critic and she positions herself in this certain way. And here's that quote. I loved her critic's poise, her cool reserve, the elegant way she smoked cigarettes and opened bottles with the flat end of a Bic. I had loved becoming her, listening to her music, wearing her clothes, as I altered myself, changing my story, which I saw as an act of agency then, and which I think now was an act of survival. Can you talk about this? Because this is not somebody else positioning Christine as they see her as this author who has written this sexy book, but it's Christine positioning herself.
Yeah, this is Christine's reinvention. Like, she's come to this new medium, which is words, and, you know, begins in criticism and she moves into fiction. But Christine's like, okay, here's my opportunity to reinvent myself as a person on my own terms. And she wants to be that woman. She wants to be this like cool, composed, kind of like removed figure who has it all under control, because I think she's lost that sense of control before in her relationship with Richard, and she really doesn't want to repeat it. And again, yeah, it's so important to Christine that nobody knows what she's been through. And so she kind of steps into this image that she's created for herself. But it's a very brittle image too. It's very pristine, but it has that like that quality that it could be shattered at any moment, which I think, you know, she kind of moves through in the book.
You just mentioned the name Richard, and you mentioned it a little while ago too. I want to talk about names, because we do not learn Richard's name until like far into the second half of the book. I mean, he's known as the old painter, I think. And there are other characters. I mean, we learn their names, but then there are some. I mean, her ex, we know him as the ex, my ex. That's how she talks about them. Talk to me about the importance of a name, but also the importance of not allowing somebody to have a name.
I love that question. I enjoy thinking about names, which is kind of funny because I tend not to give my characters like very distinctive names. I like kind of feeling for like the everyman name that suits them best, kind of based on intuition. And yeah, so a lot of the strangers that Christine meets have names. They introduce themselves to her. And two of the characters who are closest to Christine, arguably, are her ex and the old painter, as her mentor is known for most of the book. And to me, it's because neither of these characters are precisely real to Christine. They're not like really allowed to be fully realized people for most of the book. Her ex kind of represents like this rupture, this failure in her life to adapt to this new, this new self that she had so carefully orchestrated, and it all falls through when she finally decides to tell the truth. So calling him her ex is this way of keeping him at arm's length. And in the same way, the old painter is not really, he's just the old painter, which is like a very rude way of referring to a person. And to me, it's Christine's attempt to assert a kind of power over him, to try to give him this moniker that, you know, is her way of kind of like pinning him down. But once we get to know him better, and once Christine gets to know him better, then she refers to him by his name, and we learn his name, and it kind of mirrors the experience of getting to know this character better over the course of the book. Like, he goes from being a villain to, you know, quite possibly a person.
I want to talk about the title. The word discipline was referred to a couple of times in the book. One, when Christine admits that she had lied to Henry in Chicago at the museum when she told him she wasn't an artist. She felt it was true because she had left that discipline. And then again later, when Christine is talking with a former fellow art student, Francis, Christine tries to claim that she, Christine, lacked discipline. Talk to me about this word and why you chose it for your title.
So, and the third meaning of discipline, which is kind of maybe the sexiest,
right?
Like discipline and punish, which, you know, it's a book about revenge, right? So it's also kind of a book about punishment and, or this idea of like disciplining someone for something they've done wrong, which Christine is very interested in. But I think that the definition of discipline that most appeals to me is this kind of rigor, this interest in, you know, working really hard and working really devotedly to make something, to create something. When I think of the word discipline, I always think of like someone sitting up really straight. and I think of Christine as someone with a really good posture. And I think that's sort of like a reflection of how much discipline she does have. She's able to really carry herself in this way. And so I enjoyed playing with those multiple meanings, like thinking about how such a loaded word could also be refracted so many different ways. And it was interesting because it wasn't the original title for the book. It actually took some time to arrive at. And I think it was actually in that chapter where Francis and Christine are talking, and Christine is like, I'm not like you. I lacked discipline. Where I was like, wait a second. Like, I think this could really work for the whole thing.
What was the original title?
The very first title that I kind of ran with for a bit was Tracks. I was thinking of it as like, you know, the old painter is following the tracks that Christina's leaving. There's something kind of mysterious about it, maybe too mysterious. So tracks it is no longer. And then also I learned that it's the title of a Louise Erdrich book. I didn't want to steal that from her, although I do owe her writing a great debt.
I noticed a few moments in the book when Christine is thinking about a grid or mesh. One, she imagined a grid placed over figures, a delicate open meshed net, and then the comment about archaeologists preparing for a dig by making a string grid over the earth. And then at Kristen's house, what first looked like plastic sheeting to Christine was actually plastic reinforced with a gray woven mesh. And this might be my tendency to see connections where there are none. But these mentions captured my attention because they were fairly close together. Were you exploring something there?
Yes. I like that that stood out to you because in that chapter, the previous chapters all involve works by artists to some degree. And in this chapter, like, it's much more reduced. And Christine is kind of, she's very paranoid. She believes that Richard is following her. She's a little destabilized. Her event is like about to get canceled at the bookstore because like no one's showing up. And so she's in this kind of destabilized place. And there's an artist, Agnes Martin, who lived and worked in Taos, New Mexico for many years, whose work is really oriented around the grid and oriented around these like very geometric square canvases. And so there's just like a tiny, tiny little bit of Martin at the end. It's just like a memory that Christine has of seeing of her work. But I really wanted to draw on this like visual repetition, having Christine notice it, allowing that theme of the grid to kind of work its way into the chapter. Because to me, that chapter is also the moment where Christine breaks the grid, where she ruptures her tour. She's like, okay, I'm gonna shift my travel plans, I'm gonna go somewhere else. And where she's reflecting a lot on her relationship and its ending and how, again, she kind of ruptures the safety of this grid that she had been living in.
I want to talk about these artists because the chapter titles in part one were the names of artists. You had Selmans, Hopper, Frankenthaler, Katz, and as you mentioned, Martin. Why these artists?
I wish that I had like a neater answer than like it just like came by instinct. I did, when I was thinking about Christine traveling around, I was like, what could she reasonably encounter? What could she reasonably see in these different places? And that helped me kind of decide on some of the artists. Like, the Art Institute of Chicago does have some Selmans in its collection, for example. But a great part of it was really just like, what energy and what themes in these visual artists can I bring into these chapters that kind of like align with the sort of sub-themes of each chapter? And so Selmans, I always really enjoy talking about because her work feels so close to many of the concerns in the book, but I see her work as being about realism and replicating life and what it means to try to really, really replicate life, like, you know, stroke by stroke, like pixel by pixel even. And Christine's project is very interested in like, yeah, like, you know, what does it mean for something to feel real but not be true? And then an artist like Katz, for example, you know, Katz is actually based in Maine, but I find his work to have like a lot of resonance with LA, like a lot of beaches, a lot of sun, a lot of fashion, bright colors. And so his work, you know, it's very polished, it's very beautiful. And it seemed like a really good foil for this chapter where Christine is talking to Frances, who is her friend, who is much more successful than she is, and who is still a painter and has succeeded in a way that Christine isn't. So I was interested in where those artists could resonate with what I was trying to explore.
You have experience writing essays, novellas, nonfiction, and even poetry, but Discipline is your debut novel, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How did your experience writing a novel compare to writing other forms?
I had so much fun. I really, really enjoy writing fiction. I would say fiction was my first love. I've always enjoyed reading it. And I have like a really great admiration for the novel. And I think the greatest point of difference in terms of switching genres was like realizing that there were kind of different formal concerns that I could play with. And also that I had access to genre. I was able to play with the thriller, including like a kind of thriller element in the book. I was able to touch on autofiction. I was able to experiment with, set pieces, like having two characters talk to each other and writing dialogue. So I really enjoyed getting to play in that way, and getting to kind of interact with that long history of the novel.
Now, is it correct? Are you an artist yourself?
I have been known to... to paint in my life. I was a double major in studio art and history of art when I was in college, and I have painted in the past. I'm not currently painting now, but I do try to draw, actually. That's like a real interest of mine right now.
Well, to me, it's obvious that your history of art experience played a role in this novel, because this was really well researched and I felt I was just learning. In addition to learning about the characters, I was being immersed in this world that felt real. Can you talk to me about how your studies informed this book?
Yeah. I spent so much time kind of steeped in art history, really steeped in learning how to look at art and asking certain kinds of questions about it, that I think I tend to see the world through the lens of visual art. It's kind of just like, it's how some people might see the world through like movies or music. Like, I feel like for better or for worse, like art history is my lens. And so I really enjoyed getting to do a little bit of research and getting to do that in a way where what I could pull out of the research could somehow enrich the text and kind of relate to something that Christine was thinking about or something that Christine was concerned with. So it felt really fun. It didn't quite feel like school. It felt a little bit more playful or expansive in that way.
I think it was at the beginning of the novel, Christine said, you can learn a lot about a person from the way they approach walking through a museum. How do you approach a museum?
I am a speed runner. I do like to get a sense of like what's there. And I think I've been a little burned by like moving too slowly through a museum and being like, oh man, I didn't get to see everything that I wanted to see. And the way that I've actually kind of negotiated this is I just get museum memberships so that I can go more than once and I can really focus. If I'm seeing a show for the first time, and, you know, it's like a biennial or something really big, I will try to kind of be brisk and walk through it. But at the same time, I also really love spending time with like an individual work and seeing what it yields, because I think a lot of work doesn't always give everything away at first glance. And so it's good to spend time with it. It's good to see what I might come to like about it or see what it's teaching me to see.
For readers who have not opened your book yet, do you have a word that they should keep in mind for when they're reading it? One word?
Yes. I think it will be fun to look for examples of the word narrative. And if I'm permitted to add a phrase, I think one of my favorite phrases in the book is, "That's not how I remember it."
Do you have a hope for what readers will take away from Discipline?
I hope that people will talk to each other. I hope that this book will bring people together, not in like a, you know, maybe like a huggy way, but in a, like, I want people to, you know, discuss the ending, discuss some of the questions that it raises, maybe get into some fights or, you know, push each other towards a place of understanding. I would really like people to talk to each other. And then also I hope that, you know, if anyone has maybe put down a practice or put down an art form, that they consider picking it up again. That would make me really happy. If I can add one more thing, I know that I like to talk about this book as a book about revenge. I think it's very fun and sexy to call it a book about revenge, but I actually do think it's a book about compassion as well. And I think those things go hand in hand. And I think that's, you know, a core question of the book is like, how do we have empathy? How do we have compassion while also holding in our hearts like anger and a desire for revenge? How do those things coexist?
Well, the novel is Discipline. Larissa Pham, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. This was so fun.
Discipline by Larissa Pham was published by Random House. And now, book critic Suzanne Perez looks at a prize-winning novel that says a lot more than its main character does.
It's the season for catching up on award-winning books, so this week I decided to check out David Soloy's novel Flesh, which is the recipient of this year's Booker Prize. The Canadian-born Hungarian-British writer was shortlisted for the Booker nearly a decade ago for his novel All That Man Is. But Flesh is my first experience with Soloy's writing. And my, what an experience it is! Flesh follows the life of one Hungarian man, István, from adolescence to old age. It's told in a sparse, episodic style that Booker judge Roddy Doyle called singular and extraordinary. It's certainly unlike anything I've read before, and I found it off-putting for several chapters until a dramatic plot twist grabbed my attention and propelled me through the rest of the novel. The style and subject matter will not be for everyone, but I can understand the critical acclaim. Flesh opens when main character István is 15, and he and his mother move to a new town. Not an easy age to do that, István observes, and that turns out to be the case. We begin the novel with a huge void in István's history. What happened during his early childhood? Why did his mother bring him here? And those blank spaces set a tone for the story to come. Within just a few pages, István begins doing chores for an older woman neighbor who grooms him into a sexual relationship. To call the teen passive or uncommunicative would be a gross understatement, but minimal is the mood here, as István's statements seldom go beyond yeah, no, or I don't know. A Wall Street Journal reviewer said the sparse prose leads to an almost comically minimalist dialogue, in which István conducts entire conversations, saying little except, okay. It came off as downright annoying to this reader, until I realized that Soloy seemed to be establishing the foundation for a character who is detached from his own emotions and desires, and even from his physical body. The novel follows István to London, to war, and into the upper echelons of British society. But the author omits many important events from the narrative and instead chooses to hint at them after the fact. István's personality doesn't change much through the course of the novel, but the overall theme seems to be that he is a passive participant in whatever comes his way. The lack of human connection becomes frustrating and almost painful to read. Flesh is a dark and disturbing novel, but one that's hard to put down. In it, we see a man in his most primal type of existence. There's a whole lot of sex, but not much passion. A complex and expansive plot with precious few words. For that reason, Flesh feels offbeat and original, and it's the kind of book that settles into your consciousness after you turn the final page. For Marginalia, I'm Suzanne Perez.
Flesh by David Soloy was published by Scribner. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR network. Our editors and producers for this week's show are Haley Krausen and Lou Ann Stevens. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. This is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay.
Maybe you already know about naked short selling. Maybe you've personally shorted stocks yourself. But do you know about the time short sellers ruined a Super Bowl, basically?
For me, I was a little late, but red flags went up like, what is going on? This is really scary.
At Planet Money, we get the story behind the money to explain how money works. Listen on the NPR app or wherever you get your podcasts.